Welcome back to the Deep Dive. I'm so glad you're joining us today because we have a truly mind-bending piece of research to unpack.
We really do.
Yeah, I want you to start by just imagining that you're standing at the edge of this massive, sun-drenched farm.
Just endless rows of green.
Right, endless rows. But instead of just looking at the plants, you slide on a pair of magical glasses.
Okay, magical glasses.
Yeah, and suddenly the physical world just melts away. You're looking at a perfect three-dimensional digital simulation of every single plant.
Like a video game matrix of the farm.
Exactly like that. With these glasses, you can instantly see exactly how much water each leaf holds, trace its exact growth stage, and even fast forward time.
To see how the crop is going to look in 2 months.
Right. Sounds like pure science fiction. Well, today we are looking at an incredibly ambitious attempt to make that exact magic a reality.
And doing it with basically just a standard drone photo and a vision language model.
Which is wild. Okay, let's unpack this. Today's source material is a highly confidential CVPR 2026 submission.
Paper ID 43.
Right, paper 43. It's titled Using Vision Language Foundation Models to Generate Plant Simulation Configurations via In-Context Learning.
It's a mouthful.
It really is. But before we get into the AI of it all, we need to set the stakes here. Why do we even need these magical glasses?
Well, the underlying technology required to do this is fascinating. And to
Right.
understand why this matters to you, even if you've never, set foot on a farm or written a line of code,
Right.
we need to look at the massive bottleneck in modern agricultural science.
Which is what?
If we're going to optimize every square inch of farmland on Earth, researchers have to rely on digital twins.
And a digital twin is essentially that 3D matrix we were talking about.
Exactly. It's a highly detailed virtual sandbox, a computer simulation of the crops, the soil, the sun, the management practices.
So scientists can run what-if scenarios.
Right. They can ask the simulation how a sudden drought might affect yield, or what happens if they change the planting density by just a few centimeters.
But if these 3D models are so crucial, why aren't we seeing them used across every single acre of commercial farming right now?
Because of the bottleneck.
Yeah.
The sheer manual labor required to build them is staggering.
What are they using currently to build them?
We rely on what are called functional structural plant models, FSPMs.
FSPAMs. Okay.
And these models are incredibly sophisticated. They simulate biophysical processes like
And
photosynthesis,
canopy light interception.
or water use down to the individual leaf
I'm
level.
not guessing they're slow.
Very low throughput. You can't easily deploy them at the scale of thousands of acres.
Because of the data entry.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Manually inputting all the specific localized data required to build that precise 3D model takes an agonizing amount of time. You have to measure the plants, record environmental conditions, map the spatial layout.
And then feed all of that into the software by hand.
Hand-coded, yeah.
So the radical proposed solution in this paper completely bypasses that manual labor.
Right, the big idea here.
The researchers are essentially asking, what if we just fly a drone over a field, take a standard flat 2D photograph,
Just a normal picture.
hand that picture to a vision language model, and ask the AI to instantly write the software code that generates the entire 3D digital twin?
They're attempting to automate the absolute hardest part of the pipeline.
Just translating the real world into code.
Exactly. They want the VLM to act as the ultimate translator between the messy, chaotic physical world and the highly structured, mathematically rigorous world of computer simulation.
And they don't just want a summary, right? They want actual code.
Right. The output they're asking for isn't a basic description. They want the AI to generate a flawlessly formatted JSON file,
A JSON file.
which serves as the architectural blueprint for the digital twin. It contains all the variables the simulation software needs to render the scene perfectly.
Okay, let's visualize the actual physical sandbox where they set this experiment up.
It's the target.
Yeah, picture the data set they used to test this. It's a meticulously controlled cowpea breeding field in California.
Year 2025.
Right. And they carved the field up into highly specific plots, each measuring 1.5 meters by 3.0 meters.
Planted in single rows.
Single rows, strict spacing. And they flew drones running grid patterns over these plots to capture high-resolution orthophotos. Why cowpeas in single rows, though?
Well, single rows make it slightly easier to isolate individual plants visually.
Because otherwise they just blend together.
Exactly. When plants overlap into dense canopies, figuring out where one plant ends and another begins becomes a total nightmare for computer vision.
That makes sense. So once they have those drone photos, they feed them to the AI to get the JSON file for a specific simulator.
Right, a procedural plant generation library called Helios 3D.
Helios 3D. And the sheer volume of data the AI has to accurately guess to make Helios 3D work is what really caught my attention. I mean, it's not just counting the plants.
Oh, far from it.
What else does it need?
The AI has to look at that 2D photo and populate the file with the random seed for procedural generation, like the exact geographic locations.
It has to just figure out.
Well, it has to try. And the days after planting, which we call DAP,
DAP, got it.
it needs to calculate environmental data too, like the exact elevation and azimuth angles of the sun.
Just based on the shadows in the image.
Exactly, just from the shadows. Plus field layout data, camera properties, and then it has to dive into deeply complex biophysical traits.
The biophysical traits are where this feels like magic to me.
It's the hardest part.
They're asking the AI to populate data for the prospect leaf optics model,
Yeah.
which essentially means looking at a couple of green pixels in a drone photo and reverse engineering the exact cellular makeup of the leaf.
Things like the number of mesophyll layers.
Or the internal chlorophyll and carotenoid concentrations, just from how the sunlight happens to be bouncing off the crop
It
canopy.
is a staggering ask.
Truly.
And to grade an AI on a task that complex, you need an absolute unassailable ground truth.
You can't just grade it on vibes.
Right. You cannot just use the real drone photos right away because the researchers themselves wouldn't know the exact perfect mathematical value for every single leaf's pigment.
Or every single sun angle.
Not without measuring it all by hand, which totally defeats the purpose.
Right, so what did they do?
They built a massive synthetic data set first.
A virtual test bed.
Yeah. They used traditional image processing to extract the exact plant locations from the real 10DAP drone photos. Then they fed those specific coordinates into their Helios 3D simulator to generate entirely synthetic virtual plots.
So they essentially built a perfect matrix version of the farm before testing the AI.
They did. They simulated the growth of these virtual cowpea plants at 10, 30, 50, 70, and 90 days after planting.
Tracking the whole life cycle.
Right. And for each of those growth stages, they generated 224 simulated images. They vary the sun angles, the soil colors, the camera
They're
parameters.
giving them a massive data set.
A perfectly controlled, pristine data set of 1,120 synthetic images.
Where they knew the answer key.
Exactly. They knew the exact mathematically perfect answer for every single variable in the code.
It really highlights the painstaking lengths researchers go to just to create a fair test for AI.
You have to.
You don't just throw data at the wall. You spend months building a meticulously controlled environment so you can pinpoint exactly where the model fails.
Exactly.
So, with the synthetic test bed ready, who are the actual contestants in this AI farming experiment?
The researchers selected some of the most capable open source models available right now.
The heavyweights.
Oh, yeah. On one side, we have the Gemma 3 family, released in March 2025. They tested the 4 billion, 12 billion, and 27 billion parameter versions.
Okay, and the other side.
On the other side, we have the Qwen 3VL models, released in December 2025, testing the 4 billion, 8 billion, and the massive 30 billion parameter versions.
Those are some big models.
And a crucial detail here is that they set these models up with a massive 32K context window.
That context window is essentially the AI's short-term working memory, right?
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
So giving it 32,000 tokens means it has plenty of space to process incredibly long, complex prompts, analyze the image, and output hundreds of lines of code without, losing its train of thought or crashing halfway through.
And that short-term memory is vital for the methodology they used to teach the AI.
How did they teach it?
Well, they didn't rewrite the underlying code of these models. Instead, they relied on in-context learning.
Just prompting.
Right. They wanted to see if they could coax the AI into performing this highly specific agricultural task simply by designing a better prompt.
So how exactly did they structure that prompting? I know they used an escalating syllabus to see what would finally make the AI click.
What's fascinating here is the five-step progression they designed. They systematically increased the amount of structural and contextual help they provided.
Walk us through the steps. What was method one?
Method one was zero-shot JSON. This is the baseline test.
The hardest one.
Yeah. They gave the AI its persona, told it to look at the image, extract all the necessary parameters, and output the configuration file.
No examples.
No examples, no blueprints. Just do it.
Wow. Okay, what was method two?
Method two gave it a lifeline, a JSON schema.
Like a blank blueprint.
Exactly. They handed the AI the explicit outline of the required structure, the keys, and the specific data types expected in each slot, like whether it needed an integer, a string of text, or a floating point number.
Okay, that helps with the formatting. Method three.
Method three introduced few-shot JSONs.
So giving it examples.
Right. The AI received the blank blueprint plus several examples of perfectly completed text files.
To show it the math.
It showed the model the statistical distribution of the numbers it should be aiming for.
And method four.
Method four took it a step further into few-shot images.
Adding the visual element back in.
They simulated a full multimodal chat history. They provided the model with several pairs of example images side by side with their matching, perfectly completed code.
Like flashcards.
Exactly. It serves as a visual flashcard system for the AI to reference before tackling the target image.
And then we reach method five. They called this grounding info, but it really functions like a cheat sheet, doesn't it?
It totally does.
The researchers explicitly handed the AI data that is relatively easy to extract from a drone using traditional methods.
Things you don't need a VLM to figure out.
Right. They gave it the exact plant count, the sun elevation and azimuth angles based on the drone's GPS and timestamp, and the approximate locations of the plants in meters.
And the goal there was to see if the AI could take those easily verifiable shortcuts and use them to flawlessly autocomplete the rest of the deeply complex 3D simulation file.
Now, woven into all five of those steps was a secondary prompting strategy, right?
Yes, chain of thought reasoning.
Yeah.
But they enforced it structurally.
This is the reasoning trick.
Right. Before the AI was allowed to output a single piece of hard data for the simulation, the researchers forced it to populate a reasoning key at the very top of the output file.
I love that approach. It's exactly like forcing a math student to show their work on the paper before they are allowed to write down the final answer.
It's the exact same logic.
By making the AI generate a paragraph of natural language text first, you literally force the neural network to analyze the visual cues, evaluate the lighting, and establish a logical pathway before it commits to the rigid mathematical variables in the rest of the document.
And it is a proven technique for reducing errors in complex tasks.
But did it work?
Well, the ultimate question of the paper is whether all of this elaborate scaffolding,
with schemas, the flashcards, the reasoning,
actually produced an accurate digital twin.
So let's look at the results. Structurally, they actually passed the test.
The formatting was solid.
Yeah, when you ask an AI to output hundreds of lines of nested code, you generally expect the formatting to break constantly.
Missing commas everywhere.
Exactly. But syntax errors maxed out at only 6.6%.
That's incredibly low.
And the missing key rate, where the model just forgets to include a required variable, maxed out at 8.5%.
And the researchers noted that these were incredibly minor, easily fixable formatting quirks.
So from a software language perspective, the models nailed it.
They did.
But when we look at the actual accuracy of the data they generated inside that code, here's where it gets really interesting.
The size contradiction.
Right. We all naturally assume that a massive 30 billion parameter model is going to completely outperform a tiny 4 billion parameter model.
Bigger is better, right?
But the data from the geometric evaluations completely contradicts that assumption.
It really does. The geometric evaluations measured things like how accurately the AI could guess the days after planting.
Which is essentially judging the maturity and size of the canopy.
Exactly. And in several of the testing contexts, the tiny Qwen3VL 4 billion parameter model actually beat the massive Gemma 3 27 billion parameter model.
That's crazy.
It had a lower mean absolute error when guessing the plant's age.
And they saw the same weird inversion when evaluating plant location, too. How did they measure the accuracy of where the AI placed the virtual plants?
They used a metric called the chamfer distance.
Chamfer distance.
Yeah. When the AI generates the code, it creates a point cloud of where it thinks the plants are.
Okay.
And the actual image has a point cloud of where the plants truly are.
The ground truth.
Right. Chamfer distance calculates the average distance between each predicted point and the nearest actual point.
So it's a highly precise way to measure spatial accuracy.
Very precise. And again, the smaller Qwen models consistently showed lower error rates than the massive Gemma models, regardless of the size difference.
But why? Why does a smaller model excel at a task like this? Shouldn't more parameters equal better spatial reasoning?
Not necessarily in visual tasks. Massive models are often trained to focus heavily on the global context of an image.
Taking in the whole scene.
Right. They look at the broad strokes, the overall feel, the horizon, the lighting conditions.
But the small models don't do that.
Smaller models, or models with different attention mechanisms, might remain far more sensitive to local granular patterns.
The tiny detail.
Exactly. If you need to map the precise location of a single cowpea plant or the texture of a specific leaf, being obsessed with the big picture of the entire farm actually dilutes your focus.
So the big model gets distracted.
Basically, yes.
That hyperlocal focus brings us to the biophysical traits. We talked about how the AI was supposed to estimate chlorophyll and carotenoid content for the prospect leaf optics model.
The hardest test.
How did it fare on reverse engineering leaf chemistry?
It completely fell apart.
Complete failure.
Yeah, the AI could generally handle the basic geometry and figure out roughly where the plants were located. But when it came to estimating deep biological data, the error rates were universally high.
Even for the big models.
It didn't matter how big the model was.
Yeah.
Or how many few-shot visual flashcards they provided in the prompt. The models fundamentally failed to estimate leaf pigment concentrations accurately. In fact, for estimating anthocyanin, errors actually increased as the model size got bigger.
Which makes sense, doesn't it? You're asking a statistical algorithm to determine the precise chemical makeup of a leaf based on a few compressed RGB pixels captured by a drone hovering meters in the air.
It's just not physically possible.
Right. The visual cues required to make that calculation simply do not exist in the photograph.
The researchers recognized that limitation, but they wanted to see if they could brute force a better result using a highly targeted training method.
This is the fine-tuning.
Right. They took the Qwen 3VL32B model and ran it through a fine-tuning process called LoRA.
LoRA stands for low-rank adaptation, right? Can you explain how that differs from just building a better base model?
Sure, building a base model requires training billions of parameters from scratch on supercomputers, which costs millions of dollars.
Extremely expensive.
Right. LoRA is a highly efficient shortcut. Instead of retraining the entire massive model, you freeze the original network and only introduce a small set of new trainable parameters.
She's like a patch.
Exactly. In this case, they used 141.9 million trainable parameters and essentially sent the AI to a highly specialized 3-hour agricultural boot camp.
A boot camp for cowpeas?
Yeah. They trained it specifically on 1,788 of those perfect synthetic images.
Did that boot camp actually move the needle?
It did provide a noticeable boost for the geometric data.
Okay, so it helped with the basics.
The LoRA fine-tuned model reduced errors for basic metrics like plant count and location, particularly when it was only given the baseline zero-shot prompt.
But what about the chemistry?
It was not a silver bullet. The complex biophysical traits, the leaf chemistry, remained highly inaccurate.
And we have to remember, all of this testing so far, even the LoRA fine-tuning, was done using the synthetic data set.
The clean data.
The mathematically controlled virtual plants. The true test of any digital twin pipeline is the sim to real gap.
Yes.
What happens when you take an AI trained on clean simulated data and force it to analyze a messy, unpredictable, real-world drone photo?
When they transition to the real drone orthophotos, the performance degraded sharply.
Because the real world isn't a perfect matrix.
The real world is incredibly noisy. You have variable cloud cover, uneven soil, weeds, shadows from the drone itself.
And that confused the models.
Deeply. Because of that visual noise, the errors for days after planting and the plant count spiked significantly compared to the synthetic tests.
And that noise led to a massive hallucination problem.
Oh, this was fascinating.
Remember how the physical cowpeas in the California field were strictly planted in single rows?
Yes.
Well, when the researchers used the few-shot prompting method, giving the AI a chat history of previous examples to learn from, the AI got deeply confused by the real-world photo.
It started generating simulation code that placed the plants in double-row planting formations.
It essentially decided it knew better than the farmer how to plant the field.
Exactly. It saw a double-row layout in one of the few-shot text examples provided in the prompt, couldn't make sense of the noisy real-world photograph it was looking at, and confidently hallucinated a completely different agricultural layout based on the text alone.
Which perfectly sets up the absolute wildest part of this entire paper, the ablation study.
The blindfold test.
I love calling it the blindfold test.
This raises an important question. How much is the vision language model actually looking at the image to extract data versus just reading the text prompt, recognizing a pattern, and making a statistical guess?
Right. Is it seeing or just guessing?
To find out, the researchers ran a blind baseline. They gave the Qwen 3 VL32B model the exact same complex text prompt.
The schemas, the flashcards, the reasoning.
All of it. But they completely removed the target image.
They literally blindfolded the AI and asked it to build a 3D simulation of a farm it couldn't see.
And the results here are staggering.
Honestly, it blew my mind.
For metrics like plant count and sun elevation, the model sometimes performed better blind than it did when it was actually looking at the real image.
Let me repeat that because it took me a minute to process it. The AI was more accurate at guessing the number of plants in a physical field when it was completely blindfolded.
It is a profound finding that speaks to the core architecture of these models.
We need to understand the why behind this.
Well, when a vision language model looks at a messy, noisy, real-world image and fails to extract a clean, reliable visual signal, the image stops being helpful data.
It just becomes active interference.
Yes. Faced with that overwhelming visual noise, the AI falls back on the text context it was provided in the prompt.
It clings to the text.
It relies entirely on the hidden biases and the statistical distribution of the few shot examples you handed it.
So it just thinks, I don't know what this picture is. I'm just going to copy the text.
It essentially decides, I have no idea what I'm looking at in this picture, so I'm going to ignore it and just copy the statistical vibe of the text examples. It prioritizes reading the context over truly observing reality.
So what does this all mean? The paper successfully proves that vision language models can, theoretically, generate the complex, nested software files required for 3D digital twins directly from a prompt.
They do understand the language of the simulator.
But they are absolutely not ready to replace human annotation or traditional hard-coded computer vision systems.
Not yet. The accuracy just isn't there for the fine biophysical details, and they are far too easily distracted by real-world noise.
So what's the next step?
The authors conclude that to really make this pipeline viable in the future, we need vastly more curated context.
It's like what?
To solve the pigment problem, we might need to feed the AI a comprehensive leaf color book, giving it exact, ground-truthed color codes to reference against the image.
Instead of just guessing.
Right. Or we might need to leverage those massive 128K token context windows to provide hundreds of perfectly annotated visual examples.
Giving the AI a much richer statistical baseline to draw from.
Exactly.
Bringing this back to you, the listener, this study is a brilliant cautionary tale about how we interact with modern AI across any discipline.
It really is.
An AI can sound incredibly confident. It can format its output flawlessly, handing you a perfectly structured document or a beautiful piece of code that looks like a work of engineering art.
A perfect JSON file.
Right. But beneath that perfect formatting, it might just be telling you exactly what it thinks you want to hear, based entirely on the context of your prompt.
Rather than truly observing and solving the problem you handed it.
It functions as the ultimate confirmation bias machine if you aren't rigorously checking its work.
It will follow your structural rules to the letter while completely hallucinating the substantive facts.
Which leaves us with a final, slightly unsettling thought to mull over. We just saw an AI generate a highly structured, statistically plausible simulation of a real-world farm without even looking at the photograph.
By relying purely on text bias.
Right. As these models get exponentially better at mimicking the statistical distribution of our world through text, are we approaching a future where physical observation is no longer the foundation of our data?
Wow.
Will actually looking at the real world just become a minor variable we occasionally use to tweak our purely mathematical AI-generated assumptions?
That is a wild thought.
It is definitely something to think about the next time you ask an AI to analyze a photo for you. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and we'll catch you next time.